This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me once again for another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime stories. We'll begin this week with the adventures of Philip Marlowe and the Uneasy Head, his story from June 6th, 1950. After that, it's Nick Carter, Master Detective, in the case of the Crystal Prophecy, his episode from March 23rd, 1947.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Uneasy Head.
Hey, Slattery, you running a bar here?
I don't be neglecting the regular clientele.
Okay. Everybody relax. Remember, them also serve will only stand around and wait. I'm calling them like I see them. Now, you try again, chum. Another shot?
Yeah. Say, Slattery, you happen to know a guy named Sammy Arch? I was supposed to meet him here at 6. That was an hour ago.
Here you are, chum. Another shot.
What's yours, friend?
Rye, wander on the side.
Rye and a little help.
Slattery, I asked you a question.
Listen, chum, I sell whiskey, I sell gin, I sell beer. Pretzels I give away, but only pretzels. If you're busting with questions, try Louie.
Louie?
Yeah, a punk in the corner there, the guy with the patent leather hair.
Oh.
Louie welcomes visitors. Now, you want to pay for this drink?
Oh, wouldn't miss it for the world. Mind it for me, will you?
Hey, okay. Round boy, I'm going to forget I'm a lady.
Your name, Louie?
That's me.
Slattery tells me you might have some information I want.
Could be. What race?
Don't want any dope on ponies, Louie. I'm looking for a guy.
A guy like who?
Archer. Sammy Archer. Do you know him?
No. What's the matter? You welch on a bet?
No. Well, thanks anyway, Louie.
I got something good at Belmont, if you...
Check. Beer twice. Bourbon once around. Coming up now.
No luck, eh, chum? I thought maybe Louie could help you. He knows everyone in town.
Yeah? Well, here's the Sammy Archer, a guy I never met. Well, so long, chum.
Yeah. Don't go away mad, huh?
Oh, not a chance, Slattery. After all, you... Hey, what kind of scotch was that? Tastes like boiled cabbage heads.
Slattery, what did you... That drink, it was dope. Are you no good, tooth-timing?
For a long time. 100 years, maybe, I felt good. The temple was beautiful. Chinese beautiful. Everywhere lacquered woodwork that had the deep bottomless luster of a pigeon blood ruby, and 1,000 shelves filled with 10,000 smiling ivory Buddhas, and the lovely streamlined dancing girl, beaming in a white silk mandarin robe, waiting my pleasure. But then suddenly the 100 years ran out. The lacquered woodwork was a bar, the Buddhas lines of whiskey bottles, the white silk mandarin gown and apron. The lovely dancing girl, Slattery.
Go! Oh. Oh. Go! Go!
Easy now. Yeah. Chum, come on, try this. It'll bring you around.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Oh, it's you. How dumb do you think I am, Slattery?
Hey, easy. No way. You got it wrong, chum. I didn't slip you that, Mickey. Come on, now. Lay back. You're going to be okay.
How long have I been out?
Oh, about an hour. You're in the storeroom behind the bar. Now, just take it slow, Mr. Marlowe.
How do you know my name?
Well, I checked your wallet when you folded, chum, and saw you with a big-shot private dick from Hollywood.
Yeah?
That gave you my vote.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I heard all about you, Mr. Marlowe, the time you nailed that lousy Paul Miles who was hitting all the bars for some old-time protection. Yeah, but you should have said who you was.
Hey, Slattery, got any idea who got to my drink?
No, It must have been the bird next to you. Rye and water on the side.
You know him? Here, come on, help me up.
Yeah, sure.
Steady,
easy now. There we are. No. Never seen him before. He shoved off when you went to see Louie.
What'd he look like, Slattery, think?
He smoked a cigar.
Yeah?
Yeah, kind of a red face and was wearing a camel hair overcoat. Oh, yeah. He was nervous. He kept playing with a book of matches. He tore them out one at a time, and then he bent them up. See?
Bent them up, huh?
Yeah.
You don't know his name, where he hangs out?
No, zero, chum, except that Louie heard him ask someone about how to get to Palm Springs, but... No. Mr. Marlowe, I do know about Sammy Archer.
You do?
Yeah, I didn't want to talk up before Mr. Marlowe because I didn't know you.
Slattery, where can I find Archer?
Well, you ain't putting him on the spot for someone, eh?
No, nothing like that. He called my office today, said he had some kind of a business deal with a guy he didn't trust. Wanted me to meet him here at the bar, get the details, and play bodyguard. Now, come on, tell me, Slattery, who is Archer? Where can I find him?
He's a second story man, Mr. Marlowe.
He's a... You mean that...
Yeah, he knocks off fancy places. Beverly Hills, most of the time. He's strictly a prowler.
Oh, fine.
Well, you could probably tag him over at 31 West Grand. He's got a basement apartment there. But, look, you ain't gonna be careless about the dope I gave out, are you?
Don't worry. I'm not gonna work for him, Slattery. I still handpick my clients.
Well, then, why are you going there?
For a lead, Slattery. A lead on a nervous guy in a camel hair coat. You see, I also handpick my enemies. .31 West Grand Avenue was a dirty stone tenement propped up by a dirty stone stoop. A cracked pavement led to the basement apartment, which showed a fuzzy slice of yellow light, where the door was cracked open inches. So when I knocked, I was ready for almost anything, just as long as it was on the seamy side. But I didn't expect it to come from overhead.
You're wasting your time, big boy. When Sammy leaves his door open, you shouldn't bother knocking.
You mean he's out?
No, I mean he's in. And he's got the blind staggers. I know. I heard him falling over the furniture. But go ahead. See for yourself. If you'll pardon appearances. The big slob.
The lady was right. A tinny radio led me to the basement room where I found the two scarred wicker chairs and the single end table on hand turned over. Drawers open and overflowing, pieces of discarded clothing everywhere. And in the middle of all that, sprawled along the edge of a threadbare couch that was weak in the springs, Sammy Archer. He was facing me, eyes closed, and wearing a faded blue bathrobe two sizes too big for him. And next to one hand that rested on the floor was an empty gin bottle sitting on a clipping, torn out of a fashion magazine. On one side, an ad for a Bendix automatic washer. On the other, a picture of a diamond tiara. A jeweled crown, which the caption said belonged to Mrs. Bessie Dunsmuir of Palm Springs, California's most celebrated hostess. Well, it was a good time to awaken mine host by shaking, well... Hey, Sammy. Archer, come on, pull yourself together. I should have known better. You can't wake a dead man by shaking him. Especially when he's got a knife buried in the middle of his back. Phil Marlowe, Remini.
Hiya, Phil.
Tribune got time for a few questions?
Yeah, we're up to our ears with the Dunsmuir story. What do you got, Phil? Beauty, beast, or traffic accident?
Skinny guy with a golf ball complexion and the name Sammy Archer. Ever hear of him?
Sure, a two-time loser out of Joliet. Jewelry, team with a fence named Christy Roach.
Roach, huh? Say, tell me, Tony, what is he... Hey, wait a minute, Remini, what did you just say about Dunsmuir?
Huh? Oh, all that. Didn't you catch PM sheets?
No.
Someone got away with a precious tiara last night. Was insured for $100,000.
They tag anyone for it?
Not yet, but they're working on it. Seems that a gardener left her Palm Springs lash up the same time as a crown of diamonds.
Gardener, huh?
Yeah, was working under a phony name.
Well, this Christy Roach, what's he look like?
Oh, big red face, wears a cigar front and center.
Thanks, now I'm really getting someplace.
That means what, Phil?
2 feet from the corpse, Remini. There's a textbook on gardening.
Corpse? What corpse? Where are you, Marlowe?
31 West Grand Avenue, where somebody stabbed Sammy Archer to death. Now, listen, Remini, If you sit on this a while, I think I may be able to wrap it all up for you after a quick trip to Palm Springs.
Why not use us at the law? What's your angle, Phil?
A very personal one, kid.
Like what?
Like a Mickey that shredded the lining of my stomach. I don't like that kind of treatment. It's bad for the ego. I'll call you later. Goodbye. The trip to Palm Springs was 2.5 hours of hard driving through sterile wasteland. And there was plenty of time for me to add what always came out to the same thing. Sammy Archer, posing as a gardener, swiped the Dunsmuir tiara to pedal through Christy Roach, whom he feared. But Roach had double-crossed him, in a permanent sort of way, taking care of me and then headed for Palm Springs. Yeah, but there I got stopped each time. Why Palm Springs? Unless, of course, Archer's apartment turned inside out meant that the tiara was still hidden someplace in the desert hamlet. Yeah, that really would make it a cinch to find.
Yes, sir?
I'd like to see Mrs. Bessie Dunsmuir, please. My name is Philip Marlowe.
Police or gentlemen of the press are no longer welcome. Good evening, sir.
Steady, Jeeves. I have information about the tiara. Now tell that to your mistress, or you'll only be able to look down that long nose through one eye.
This way, sir, if you please.
The interior of the Dunsmuir shanty was strictly colossal. From a foyer the size and shape of the Union Station to a plush, leather-lined den that was about as cozy as a parking lot. And Mrs. Bessie Dunsmuir herself fitted perfectly, because as the renowned party giver glided into the room, I saw enough jewelry on her arms, ears, and neck to match Tiffany, carat for carat. She listened intently while I brought her up to date. After that, she ushered me into an uncomfortable chair, rang for long nose, and then asked a sensible question.
Mr. Marlowe, this Sammy Archer, what did he look like?
Well, he was thin, Mrs. Dunsmuir, and sandy hair. Does that fit your ex-gardener?
Precisely. Now perhaps we're actually going to make some progress. The police here haven't, and... come in, Martin. Oh, a liqueur, Mr. Marlowe?
Oh, no, thanks. No.
Thank you, Martin.
Mrs. Dunsmuir, yes. Did you ever notice a red-faced man who smoked cigars hanging around, talking to Archer, perhaps?
No, I never did. Did you, Martin?
No, madam. I don't believe I did. Excuse me, madam.
Good evening, Dunsmuir residence. Who's calling, please? One moment, sir. A Mr. Endicott, madam.
Endicott? I don't seem to know any Endicott. Hello? I'm sorry, Mr. Endicott, but I don't seem to recollect... what? You... well... yes. Yes, of course. I'll see you tonight here. Goodbye.
What's wrong, Mrs. Dunsmuir?
Oh, just some more trouble over the estate. Ever since my husband passed on 3 years ago, we've had a mountain of trouble with his investments.
I see. Well, about the tiara, Mrs.
Marlowe, do what you can about locating it. You'll be rewarded handsomely by the insurance company if you're successful, I'm sure. They stand to lose $100,000.
Yeah, but now, can't you tell me anything about Archer?
I'm afraid not. I don't believe I ever said more than 2 words to him. Now, excuse me, Mr. Marlowe, and thank you for your interest. Martin,
madam,
please show the gentleman out.
Outside, I chalked the Dunsmuir interview off at face value. Proof positive that Sammy Archer and the sticky-fingered ex-gardener were one and the same. Then I headed for town on the first public phone, which was at a mobile gas station. There I swapped a $10 bill for a pocketful of quarters and started calling people back in L.A. who might know more about Christy Roach and the kind of connections he could have in Palm Springs. But after 4 near misses, I quit and stepped aside to let a big man with a beefy face that belonged on an English bulldog take his turn. However, he had other ideas, and he pointed them out bluntly with a shiny automatic.
I wonder if you could help me, Sonny. I'm looking for a diamond tiara.
You gotta be kidding. I wear a fedora besides...
Hold it right there. I have news for you, Sonny. While you were gabbing into the tube there, the station attendant left, closed shop, went into the bar next door. Out of earshot.
So?
So we're alone. And that means I'm going to...
You very little...
Stay right there, Marlowe.
Well, well, well. Christy Roach. Red face, cigar and all. Glad to see you.
Shut up. Come on, we're getting out of here.
Without our buddy, then?
Don't worry about him, Milo. He'll keep that way. Maybe a lot longer than you will.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, every Wednesday night, CBS, the network of the stars, brings you Groucho Marx in his dizzy quiz, You Bet Your Life. To hear You Bet Your Life starring Groucho Marx this Wednesday night on most of these same CBS stations, as well as Dr. Christian and that bright new musical show, The ABCs of Music. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Uneasy Head.
The way Christy Roach had brought his gun barrel down on the bulldog's scalp, I knew he meant it when he jammed the same gun into the small of my back and marched me to my car. He didn't relax until we were driving down a dark side street toward the center of town.
Well, kid, you jumped right out of the frying pan into the fire. You should have taken that first hint I tossed you.
The Mickey? Yeah, that was real cute. But it was too subtle, Christy. I didn't really peg you till I found Sammy Archer.
Oh? It's too bad about Sammy. That was more or less of a mistake.
Oh, sure. You only intended to carve your initials. The knife slipped.
No slips, kid. At the time, I thought Sammy had tried to pull a fast one on me, but I found out later he was just stupid. He had a great thing, and he was just too dumb to see it. As for you, turn east the first chance you get, and don't run any stop signs, you understand?
Where are we going?
Oh, no place in particular, just so it's nice and quiet. You know, you don't know when to quit, Marlowe, so now you're just one of the loose ends I've got to tuck in before I clean up my business here. Take it easy on the corners.
You told me to turn east the first chance I...
I also told you to mind your manners!
Busting my wrist isn't going to help my driving much.
It'll be worse the next time. I've got a lot of ground to cover yet tonight, and I want it smooth.
That's too bad. Because there's a bump coming up fast right now. We picked up a tail. Huh? Take a look.
Cops.
Yeah, cops. Call it, laughing boy. You're the skipper. Do we race them out of town or do I pull over?
Pull over. I don't know what that beef is, but play it straight, kid, because if it comes to shooting, you'll be the first to drop.
Hey, can't you read, buddy? You're on a one-way street.
You're telling me.
Yeah, only you're going the wrong way.
Yeah, I know. Well, you see, my friend...
I warned you.
What about him?
Well, he's in a hurry, officer. I was taking him as far as the corner there. He said it was okay to come this way. I didn't. I'm a stranger here.
Uh-huh. Also, you're a big boy now. You should make up your own mind.
You're so right.
Here, Mac, if you're in a hurry, you can go, but you better get out and walk.
Thank you.
Your friend here is going to be tied up for quite a spell. All right, let me see your license.
Maybe the limb of the law and I should have nailed him right then and there. But there were still too many loose ends, and I wanted Christy Roach to clear them up for me. So I watched him walk out of sight while I listened with half an ear to a lecture on blind drivers. Well, it was a small enough price to pay for the service rendered, so I thanked the officer for the ticket and then headed back to the filling station in a bulldog with a headache who might be in a mood to talk. But when I got there, I found he hadn't waited around. After that, I checked the neighborhood and was 15 minutes getting to first base, which turned out to be the bar of a French restaurant across the street. Run by one Monsieur Jean Corret, a high-octane number who apparently had overheard a phone call earlier.
I immediately notified the police. Nothing, they said. Believe me, my friends, the lowliest gendarme in Paris would have more sense. Throw away an important clue? Never. I tell you, our police...
Mr. Corret, can I see you a minute?
I? But of course, monsieur. What is it?
Well, it better be in private, huh? It's about the Dunsmuir case.
Ah, non de nom. Step this way, monsieur.
All right.
You naturally are a detective.
Naturally, yeah. Now, look, I understand you overheard a phone call.
Oh, yes. About an hour ago, a suspicious man called the Dunsmuir place from here.
What did he look like?
I am desolated, monsieur. I do not know.
You said it was an important clue.
I assume it was important. In a case as big as this, Anything may be important. The smallest...
You made your point. Go ahead.
He made an appointment. I only overheard, monsieur. The telephone is back this way in the alcove out of sight. I was passing by right here when I heard a man ask for the Dunsmuir residence. He talked to his party and made an appointment. I couldn't hear where or when, so I went on about my business. But suddenly, a memory exploded like a bomb in my head. Bessie Dunsmuir, the owner of the stolen tiara. I rushed like this, monsieur, to the phone. Pardon, madame. But he was gone, monsieur. I called the police at once.
The rest I can fill in. Now tell me something else, Mr. Corey. Did you happen to notice a man with a cut on his head around here a while ago?
A cut?
Yeah.
Why, yes. One who looked as ugly as Satan himself. I saw such a one in the washroom. You mean he's a suspect?
Well, not exactly, no. But he's connected. Where can I find him?
You ask me, monsieur. He was sick. I tried to help him, but he refused and left.
You have no idea where he went?
No. But wherever it was, I'll wager he was too wobbly to get there, monsieur.
All right. In that case, I better make a quick call and
The telephone, certainly.
Yeah.
Bessie Dunsmuir hasn't had a new husband for two whole years, my dear. I can't imagine how she keeps up that elaborate front of hers. Why, do you know...
You!
What?
Madame, hang up the telephone at once. I insist. Vitement.
I beg your pardon.
In the name of the police, monsieur is a detective. I demand you clear the line.
I've paid my nickel and
Never mind. Skip it. But I would like to know about those bent matches on the floor.
Well, I don't know.
What do they mean, monsieur?
I better skip the call and get going fast. You've been a big help, Corey. Maybe I can get you the Croix de Guerre. Bent matches that littered the floor under the phone meant that the man who had made an appointment to meet with Bessie Dunsmuir had been the fence, Christy Roach. And to top it off, she'd lied about it. It didn't make any sense. But I added it to the rest of the question marks and made a beeline for Bessie's mansion. I parked a block away from the place, walked back, and let myself in through an iron gate at the side, and wound up in front of a car, half hidden in a clump of hibiscus bushes. A man was leaning in the open door with a match in his hand, reading the registration on the steering post. It was the bulldog I'd seen first at the gas station. When he saw me, his hand dived under his jacket for a gun, but I was on him before he could get it out.
Oh, my head.
You're due for another dose of the same, Buster, unless I get some fast answers. The time for games is over, and even a private detective can run out of patience.
You're a private dick.
Yeah.
You, I don't get it. This car here belongs to the guy who helped you, fence, Christy Roach. And if he's inside, I got...
Roach didn't help me, and you've got to do nothing till I find out about you. Who are you?
Temple. Fred Temple. Amlin Insurance Company.
Oh, no.
We're covering the missing tiara. Something's haywire.
An insurance investigator?
Yeah. I'm not going to make it, fella. My head, you better get in there and stop...
When he passed out, he sagged against me like a sack of wet wash. I stretched him out on the grass and after one look knew there was nothing more I could do. I went over to the house and quietly tried locked doors all the way around until I came to an open one in the butler's quarters. A bed lamp was on, so I braced myself for another meeting with Martin. When he came to the door, he was in his nightshirt. As soon as enough of his chin was showing, I swung! It was a distinct pleasure. I stepped over him and went through his rooms and on up the long hall to the main part of the house. I finally located Bessie in the leather-lined den. She was alone, but judging from the rate she was burning up the jittery cigarette in her hand, she expected trouble at any moment.
Marlowe, how did you get in here? Why are you here?
Just checking up on a lie, Bessie.
Lie? I don't know what you're talking about.
A late day tonight. Incidentally, he's due any second now. His car is outside.
On my grounds?
Yeah. Surprised? What's so important about that? Now, look, you better tell me all about it, Bessie.
No. Get out of here. Get out.
Later. Right now, this setup is so full of holes, even the truth is leaking out. First, Roach the fence, figuring Sammy Archer, the guy who swiped your tiara, was pulling a fast one. And he changed his mind and got a new angle. Second, you brushed me off because actually you're afraid of finding the tiara. And third, the insurance company that's covering your loss is suspicious. Yeah, it's screwy, but it can only add one way. Like the tiara that was stolen from here yesterday is worthless.
Are you insane?
It was famous, fabulous, worth a king's ransom.
Yeah, the original, maybe. Not the cheap duplicate. I may be fuzzy on the details, but the big pitch is easy. You dismantled the original and sold it probably quite a while ago. But not before you made a duplicate to keep up appearances so gossips wouldn't know you were going broke. Also, you kept up the insurance on it for the same reason. And the duplicate was stolen. People knew you'd been robbed, so you were forced to claim the insurance. But you knew that if the fake was recovered legally, you'd be prosecuted by the insurance company and disgraced. Sure, Christy Roach knows that, too. He's coming here for blackmail, isn't he? Why else? Come on, Bessie, you might as well... You might as well...
Might as well what? What are you looking at?
A cigar butt there on the floor.
Oh.
It's burned a hole in your rug. What happened to make Roach drop a cigar, Bessie? Where is he?
I don't know what you're...
Stay away from that desk! I mean it, Bessie. Next time it's for keeps. Now stay back. Where is he?
In the closet there. I didn't know what else to do. You are right about the blackmail. About everything. I had to kill him. He'd have wrecked my life.
Yeah. Just your way of life. That was top heavy anyway.
I guess so. But I thought I had to have it that way. Well, at least I'll give them all a big laugh on the way out. Bessie Dunsmuir's a great entertainer.
Bessie Dunsmuir, the world's greatest hostess, invited the police and reporters out herself. The fake tiara was found in the back of Roach's car. And she wore it cocked over one eye for the benefit of the press, the photographers, and her friends. By the time that party was over, it was almost dawn. Bessie was right. The papers came out and the giggles began. But Fred Temple drinking coffee under a head full of bandages didn't see much to laugh at.
It's pathetic. Something awful sad there someplace, Marlowe.
I agreed. Uneasy lies the head that wears a crown. Even a phony one.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Verna Felton, Wally Mayer, Lou Krugman, Ben Wright, John Daner, Edgar Barrier, and Charlotte Lawrence. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Orant. Now, a special announcement for Philip Marlowe fans. Next week, Philip Marlowe will be heard Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Be sure and be with us again next week on Wednesday evening when Philip Marlowe says...
This time there was an innocent aboard, a noisy corpse and a quiet killer. But before I knew which was which, I'd mixed with all three while going 70 miles an hour.
Now that warm weather's here, many of us will be doing more driving and more walking. It's the duty of every motorist and every pedestrian to take every precaution so that we may cut down on the terrible injury and death toll exacted by traffic accidents. These accidents don't just happen. They're man-made. Somebody causes them. Make sure that you're not responsible for a traffic accident. Walk and drive carefully. The life you save may be your own. This is CBS, where Philip Marlowe will come to you on Wednesday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Dutch cleanser, famous for chasing dirt, present Nick Carter, famous for chasing crime. Every week at this time, two great names are joined as Old Dutch Cleanser brings you one of the most resourceful and daring characters in all detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective.
But, Nick, how do you know it couldn't have been suicide?
The evidence shows it, Patsy.
But the windows were locked on the inside. No one went through the door. If it was murder, how was it done?
The same evidence, Patsy. The bottle tells how and why it was murder.
Now for the case of the Crystal Prophecy. Today's adventure with Nick Carter, brought to you by Old Dutch Cleanser. Our story begins in Nick's office about 10 o'clock one bright sunny spring morning.
Well, I'll be darned.
What is it, Patsy?
Nick, I'm following the latest records on suicides, and they show that during the past 6 weeks, four women have committed suicide.
Oh, what's so curious about that?
Well, each of these women was in her middle 30s. Each was a widow with quite a bit of money. And in each case, the police couldn't find a single clue to the reason for the suicides.
Hmm. When was the last one?
Night before last. Mrs. Doris Manson. Nick, don't you think there might be some connection between these suicides?
Maybe. Certainly looks like a lot of coincidence if there isn't.
That's what I thought. Are we going to do anything about it?
We are. We're going to finish the report I'm working on, and then we're going down to talk to Maddie about this epidemic of suicides.
Good afternoon, Hassan. I hope I'm not late.
Please to enter, Mentaib. You are expected.
I get more excited every time I come here. Is Rashid El Bey ready to receive me?
Min Sahib will please to sit there. I go tell master.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Langdon. It is well that you arrived.
Oh, I couldn't be late to see you, master. I do so want to hear more.
Then what you have heard has pleased you?
Oh, yes. Everything has happened just as you said it would. Just after I left you the other day, I dropped my purse and a man picked it up for me. It was a man named Robert Winter, just as you said it would be.
This Robert Winter, he pleased you?
Oh, yes. He's a perfect gentleman and so handsome. I think that he's romantically inclined, and I thought perhaps...
I understand, madam. Please to draw near and look into the crystal. Do not allow your attention to wander for an instant. O ball of ever-knowing light, bring to your surface the truth about Robert Winter and Martha Langdon. Make the future clear that we may read it. The ball begins to clear. A picture is forming. I see. No. No, it cannot be.
Huh?
Oh, ball of crystal, are you sure?
Oh, what's the matter, Elbey?
I am sorry, madam. I cannot tell you what the crystal ball has shown to be the future for you. It is better that you remain in ignorance.
No. If there's anything bad, I demand that you tell me.
The crystal ball shows, madam, that you will shortly take your own life.
Oh, but that's absurd. I have no reason to do away with myself.
I am sorry. I am only the instrument through which the pictures are made clear.
Well, now that I know about it, isn't there any way the future can be changed?
It is difficult, madame. Very difficult.
Oh, I'll do anything. Anything. Can't you help me?
It is possible, madame.
How?
It is a long and difficult process. It will mean that I must deny myself to all my other disciples. Much time will be lost. Much money will be lost.
Oh, I have money. I'll give you money.
It will take a great deal of money, madame. I shall have to devote all my time to watching over you until the danger is past.
How much would that be?
It would be $100,000.
Oh, no, I can't pay that much.
It is well known that Madame wears pearls worth that amount.
Give up my pearls?
Pearls mean nothing, Madame, when the owner is dead.
No, I have enough willpower to keep from killing myself. And if necessary, I can hire somebody to watch me day and night for much less than $100,000.
As you wish, madame. But it would not be wise to...
I won't pay that much to anybody for something I should be able to do myself. No, thank you.
As you please, madame. Good day. And may I wish you everything that fortune will bring you.
You know as well as I do, Nick, that suicides run in waves.
I know, that's true, Matty. But it seems to me that there's too much coincidence in these four. Each of them is too much like the other.
Oh, that's crazy, Nick. The first one drove her car off a cliff. The next jumped off a building. The third fixed herself up in a closed garage with a car motor running. And this last one jumps in front of a subway train.
But, Matty, did you notice that each of these suicides was a woman in her middle 30s, a widow, and that each had a considerable amount of money?
Sure, I know all that, but what's it prove? Now, look, Nick, my squad investigated every one of these deaths, and we didn't find anything but suicide.
Okay, Matty, okay.
Ah, Nick, you're getting all hot and bothered about something. It's just a coincidence, and that's all.
Robert, how nice. Come in.
Hello, Martha, my dear. I hurried over as soon as I got your phone call. What's wrong?
It's Rashid El-Bey. He told me the most awful thing.
Really? I've known him for a long time. Never heard of him saying anything that didn't come true.
Does everything really come true?
Indeed it does. I'll never forget poor Doris Manson. He told her that she was going to take her own life.
And did she?
Yes, poor thing. She was standing on a subway platform one day when the train came along. She jumped in front of it.
Oh, how horrible. Robert, El-Bey told me that I was going to kill myself.
Well, that's terrible. Isn't there anything we can do?
El-Bey said that he could do something about it, but it would cost me $100,000. I told him I couldn't afford to pay that much.
Not when your life is in the balance?
No. I can't believe I'm going to commit suicide.
I've never known El-Bey to be wrong. I think it would be better for you to pay him, Martha.
I'm not going to do it.
Very well, my dear. You know you can count on me for any help you need.
Oh, thank you, Robert. I know I can.
Now, how about a glass of your fine port? It'll do us both good.
Oh, I think that's an excellent idea.
I'll get it. I must say I admire your courage, my dear.
Oh, I'm not brave. I just won't part with all my money for something I don't think will happen.
Well... the wine will make you feel better. Wine always helps. And now, Martha, to your health and long life.
Hello?
Hello, Martha. This is Camilla Huntington. I just called to see if you'd received my invitation.
Yes, it's lying here in front of me.
I just know you're going to enjoy Rashid El-Bey. He's such an interesting person.
Yes, he is.
But whatever's the matter, my dear? You sound as though you don't like El-Bey.
Oh, it isn't that, Camilla. It's just that he told me something very unpleasant.
He did? Whatever was it?
I'd rather not discuss it, Camilla.
Oh, look, Martha, why don't you try him again? Perhaps he's looked into his crystal again and has seen something for the better.
Do you think there's a chance?
I most certainly do. Think about it, dear. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow at my party. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Camilla, and thanks. Try him again. Yes, I'll do it. Oh, why didn't I think of that before? Oh, I'm sure he's seen something else. Is this Hassan?
Yes. Who speaks, please?
This is Mrs. Langdon. I've got to speak to El-Bey right away.
One moment, Mentaib.
Good evening, Mrs. Langdon.
Oh, I just had to call you, El-Bey. I wondered if you would look into your crystal ball again. See if it said the same thing.
I have looked many times, madam. The pictures have not changed.
Oh.
The span of your life is growing short.
Oh, no.
I beg of you to reconsider before it is too late.
Well, I won't reconsider paying you $100,000, if that's what you mean.
Alas, then, what is written will be so. I am sorry, madame. The sands of your life run out rapidly.
Oh, I never should have called him in the first place. He scares me so. Perhaps I'd feel better if I drank a glass of wine. Now, maybe this will lift me out of this terrible mood. I certainly hope so. Awfully nice of you to pick me up this morning, Nick.
It's all right, Patsy. I just happened to be going by. Or switch on the radio, will you? Police band?
Sure. Oh, gosh, it's a beautiful morning.
Car 18, go to Hemlock inside. Reported burglary. Car 43, go to 54th and 9th Avenue. Traffic light out of order.
Oh, what a charming radio personality.
Cars 256 and 257 get to 1485 North End Avenue. Assist Sergeant Madison and Homicide Squad in suicide on premises. That is all.
Nick, you don't suppose that could be another...
I don't know, Patsy, but I think we'll find out. We can be there in less than 5 minutes. Maddie, what's the verdict this time?
Oh, I don't know, Nick. I just got here myself. Only had time to find out that this is the same kind of case as the ones we were talking about.
What? You mean the one who committed suicide was a woman?
Yeah.
In her 30s and wealthy?
That's right, Patsy.
I suppose we'll go in and take a look.
Yeah, sure, Nick. She's right in here, in the library.
Right.
Well, there she is, the late Martha Langdon.
Say the cause of death was cyanide, judging by the smell.
Yeah, I noticed the bitter almond smell, too.
Did she leave a note, Sergeant?
Not that I've been able to find.
She didn't leave a note, Patsy. But it looks as if she tried to leave us a message.
Yeah. What do you mean? I don't see anything.
Well, look, Maddie, in her hand.
Oh, I've already looked at that. It's nothing but an invitation to some swank tea party coming off this afternoon.
Well, let me see. Mrs. Camille Huntington requests the pleasure of your presence at an afternoon tea in honor of Rashid El Bey, noted analyst of the occult. So on and so forth.
Yeah, well, what makes you think that means anything, Nick?
Well, how does she happen to be holding it in her hand when she died?
Well, she could have picked it up before she knocked herself off.
No, I don't think so, Maddie. It wouldn't be easy to open a bottle, pour out a drink, and hold onto a card like this at the same time. She must have put it down before she poured herself the fatal drink.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
So she must have made a superhuman effort to pick it up again. Remember, cyanide acts almost instantaneously. I don't know. I think Mrs. Langdon picked this up with the hope that it would lead us to her murderer.
Murder?
What's that?
That's right. Martha Langdon was murdered.
But how, Nick? The windows are locked and the maid says no one's been here all day. The dame drinks poison and you say she was murdered?
I do, Maddie. Smell this bottle of wine.
Huh? Say.
Yes. The bottle has cyanide in it, too. And no one is going to commit suicide by drinking cyanide. Poisons the whole bottle. They only put the poison in the glass. Now, Maddie... Martha Langdon was murdered.
Now back to the case of the Crystal Prophecy. Today's adventure with Nick Carter, brought to you by Old Dutch Cleanser. As we pick up our story, Nick and Matty are talking to Robert Winter, who says he hurried over to Martha Langdon's home as soon as he heard of her death.
Mr. Winter, do you know anything about this tea Mrs. Camellia Huntington is giving this afternoon?
Why, yes, I'm attending the party myself.
Well, can you think of any reason why Mrs. Langdon should have picked up this invitation in her dying moments?
No, I can't. It'll probably be a very dull affair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Winter.
Quite all right. I only hope you're able to catch Martha's murderer. Goodbye.
Oh, Mr. Winter.
Yes?
Did you happen to know a Mrs. Nora Church...
Why, yes.
And Mrs. Doris Manson?
Yes, I did.
Thank you, Mr. Winter. Thank you very much.
Nick, do you suspect Mr. Winter?
I don't know.
Of course, those specs he wears are enough to make me suspicious of him.
Spats aren't evidence, Betsy. But the fact that Mr. Winter knew at least two of the other dead women is interesting, at least. And the fact that he's going to Mrs. Huntington's party this afternoon also interests me.
You think all those other women were murdered, too?
I'm positive, Betsy. But proving it is going to be something else. Oh, come on.
Where to, Nick?
I want you to go home and get prettied up. You and I are going to that tea this afternoon. Well, quite a party, isn't it?
Nick, you haven't explained how you happen to know Mrs. Huntington so well.
Oh, I've known her a long time, Patty.
Apparently. When we showed up at the door, she acted as though you were a long-lost relative.
Right on. I'll confess. It's very simple. I recovered some jewels for her some years ago.
Oh.
Looks as if I'm not going to make good on my promise to Maddie.
Huh?
Told him I'd keep an eye on Winter. He seems to have disappeared in the crowd.
Well, nobody can get out of this room without passing us.
Oh, that's right.
Your attention, please, Effendi.
Oh, something's going to happen, Nick.
Yeah.
Effendi, it is the time for the appearance of my master, the master, Rashid Delbey.
Oh, Nick, isn't that a beautiful beard Elbey has? And what a gorgeous costume.
Yes, that is quite a costume.
Good afternoon, my friends. I am much pleased that you have gathered here to do me honor. I will say no more than tell you it is impossible for me to read my crystal ball before all of you. But I shall be happy to conduct individual readings in a room which our charming hostess has made available. I will retire now to that room.
Come on, Patsy.
Well, Nick, you're not going to have your fortune told, are you?
No, we're going back to the office.
Oh, good. You can drop me off at the beauty parlor.
Sorry, you'll have to cancel your appointment.
Oh, but, Nick, this beauty parlor is supposed to take years off a girl's face.
Patsy, we're going back to the office, and I'm going to add years to a girl's face.
Huh?
And that girl is you. There you are, Patsy.
I hope I don't look as funny as I feel.
You don't. Your makeup's fine. You look at least 35.
That's the worst compliment I ever had.
Now, Patsy, remember. Whatever happens, I want you to play along. And when you enter the master's presence tonight, don't forget whom you're supposed to be.
I won't, Nick. Well, here I go.
Good luck. And don't worry. I'll be around somewhere.
Yes?
I'd like to see Rashid Elbey, please. I'm Mrs. Andrew Waller.
Please to come in.
Thank you.
Mem Sahib will leave purse and hat here. Then she will wait in Crystal Room.
All right.
Come, please. Please to be seated here. I go now, tell master.
Thank you.
You are Mrs. Andrew Waller, who has come to seek advice from the all-seeing crystal. You are the holder of driver's license number 74592, issued in this city 18 days ago. Your original home was in Brightwood.
Why, that's wonderful.
It is wonderful only because through this power given to me, I am able to give help to those who come here to seek the answers to those things which they cannot know.
Then maybe you can help me. It's very important.
Very well, madame. Please to draw near and look into the crystal. Do not allow your attention to waver for an instant. Mm. O ball of ever-knowing light, bring to your surface the future of the one who seeks the answers to questions as yet unknown. The ball begins to clear. Picture is forming. I can see you, madame. You are wondering about a man. The man is nearly 35 years of age. He is over 6 feet tall, good-looking. He is engaged in a very dangerous occupation. His name is Nick Carter.
Well, it looks as though Nick's plan to have Patsy disguise herself as an older woman and gather evidence in Rashid El Bey's apartment has backfired. In a moment, we'll hear the conclusion of this adventure. Now back to the conclusion of the Case of the Crystal Prophecy. Today's adventure with Nick Carter, brought to you by Old Dutch Glinter. As we return to the story, Rashid El Bey says,
"If you move, I shall be forced to use this gun."
Oh.
You are very foolish to come here, my dear young spy. Well,
how did you know who I was?
A very regrettable mistake on your part. You were careful to place forged documents in your purse, but you also left the real one in it. Your appointment at the beauty parlor, in your real name.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And now I find it necessary to dispose of you.
But you wouldn't dare. You know that Nick will get you for it if it's the last thing he does.
If Nick Carter tries to get me, it will be the last thing he ever does. I am much too skilled in the art of having people commit suicide to be caught by a mere detective, even a detective of Mr. Carter's reputation.
Then you did kill those women.
Of course, my dear.
Why? What have they done to you?
They were stubborn. They refused to pay to keep from committing suicide. So they did kill themselves, as I arranged.
Oh.
Hassan. Hassan.
Yes, master.
What kept you?
I was in the rear, master.
Take this girl out to the car. I will join you. This boy is going to commit suicide.
You're making a mistake. Nick knows all about you and what you're doing.
I doubt that. But even so, it will do no good. You are on your way to your grave.
Oh, no.
Hassan, take her away.
Yes, no, master.
No, Nick.
Oh, you know what to do, Hassan.
Yes, master.
Go away.
I am going to do this.
Ah, that's the first time you ever rang that gong with your head.
Oh, Nick, is that you?
It is.
Oh golly, I thought you were Hassan.
That's what you're supposed to think.
Now I'll just rip off the master's false whiskers so that when Sergeant Matheson gets here, he can book him for murder under his real name, Robert Winter.
Oh, I tell you, Sergeant, I was never so glad to hear Nick's voice. But it was certainly queer to hear it coming from the man I thought was Hassan.
Yeah. How'd you do it, Nick?
I told Patsy I'd stick close to her, Maddie. It was the only way I could manage it.
Yeah.
Well, I got into the apartment, knocked out Hassan, and did a quick change so I could pass for him.
Well, you certainly looked like the real thing to me. I thought you were going to take me out and boil me in oil.
Oh, Patsy, you know I wouldn't do that to you.
Oh, Nick. Tell me, how did you know that El Bay and Robert Winter were the same man?
Well, you were partly responsible for that.
Huh? I was?
Yes. Don't you remember you said his spats were enough to convict him as far as you were concerned?
Yes.
Well, they did convict him. When the fake El Bey appeared at Mrs. Huntington's party, he made the mistake of wearing his spats under his robe. I caught a glimpse of them.
Well, I'll be darned.
And of course, Mrs. Langdon gave us a lot of help by grabbing up that invitation when she knew she was dying, thus calling attention to the party where I could find El Bey and his spats.
So Robert Winter would advise these women to consult El Bey, and then as El Bey, he would tell them they were going to commit suicide unless they paid him off.
That's right. If they paid, they were all right. But if they refused...
He killed them as a lesson to the others, huh, Nick?
That's right, Matty. Well, that proves that no one should ever believe the things that are seen in a crystal ball.
Well, Nick, how about a few advance hints about the adventure Old Dutch Cleanser is going to bring us next week?
Well, Bob, before I tell you about next week's adventure, I want to remind our listeners that the Red Cross is carrying on in peace just as in war. In any disaster, flood, tornado, hurricane, or epidemic, you'll find the Red Cross on hand with shelter, food, clothing, and medical care. But this is just part of the story of the activities of the Red Cross, so it's no wonder that the Red Cross needs funds. And I want to urge everyone to give, and to give generously, to the Red Cross.
And I'm sure they will, Nick.
So am I. But now, Nick, about next week's adventure.
Okay, Bob, I'll give you a few highlights. A man telephoned me, greatly excited about a discovery he just made.
And before Nick could get any details, the man had hung up.
Which made me curious. And from then on, we got mixed up with red pencil lines in a phone book, a list of perfume shops,
a junkyard, a trip to sea in a crowded barge, and a...
Whoops, Patsy.
Huh?
Save something for next week.
What do you call the story, Nick?
I call it The Case of the Smuggled Perfume. Nick Carter, Master Detective, is presented each week at this time and over these same stations by the Cudahy Packing Company, makers of Old Dutch Cleanser. Remember, when you go shopping tomorrow, get the cleanser preferred by more women in America than any other. Old Dutch Cleanser. Nick Carter, Master Detective, produced and directed by Jock McGregor, is copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Lon Clark is starred as Nick, with Charlotte Manson featured as Patsy. Matty is played by Ed Latimer. Today's script was written by Charles Stubblefield. Original music is played by George Wright. This program is fictional, and any resemblance to actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This is Bob Martin saying, when minutes count, use Old Dutch Cleanser. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this week. If you want to hear more from Philip Marlowe, Nick Carter, more Case Closed, or any other type of old-time radio, just visit relicradio.com. You'll find past episodes of this show, more old-time radio, a link to the Shoutcast stream, and our donate button. Your donations make this all possible. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime on Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.